The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, "Well, I had this career before, but it was a waste." And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And, you know, Julie, neither of us are really math people.
No.
Like, we don't do a lot of recreational math.
Yeah, and we know I'm a math phobe. I just start to say math and I start to get sweaty palms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we both enjoy music, different types of music, I think. I mean, there's some crossover. It's not, you know, it's kind of like a Venn diagram, I would imagine, but...
See, there you go.
Yeah.
With the math.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Yeah. Goodness me. Because this is exactly what we're talking about. Math and music, kind of lining up with each other, describing each other. And we end up with this idea in our head, especially, those of us who are not math people mm-hmm. and enjoy music, but don't have musical training per se.
Right.
We end up looking back at it and we see mathematicians who are really good at music or musicians that have mathematical background and we start saying, whoa, what's going on here?
This seems to be the case, right?
Right.
And I think you made the great analogy yesterday, like, oh, actors.
Yeah.
Crazy. All actors are crazy.
Right. It's like if you don't have an acting background, you don't know many actors. You're not crazy. You don't know many crazy people. You see crazy actors and it's easy to make that generality that, wow, they must be all actors must be crazy, and their craziness must make them great actors. Or maybe their acting makes them great crazies. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. That's the dog wagging the tail there. We're going to try to look at this idea of math and music being intertwined and perhaps being inherent. And we'll try to see if there really is a correlation between mathematics and musicians.
Yeah. Now, just to start off, like some famous mathematicians and either slash musicians or famous mm-hmm. musicians that have a mathematical background. On one hand, we have Einstein himself.
Yeah, violinist.
Who was a violinist. Yeah. Brian May of Queen was an astrophysicist, which I've always found kind of interesting. I don't know if it really... I haven't listened to Queen in a long time, but I don't remember there being much astrophysics injected into the songs.
That you know of.
Yeah. Maybe it was all happening just with the music, just with the guitars, you know, cause,
yeah. And he has returned to this discipline, yes?
Yeah, he has. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there have been some interesting articles about it in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have, people like, Dan Snaith, aka Caribou, who has a mathematics background. Though I've seen interviews where he's very dismissive of the idea that there's any really connectivity between the two. I think it was like a, was it an interview on data transmission? I can't remember. Or maybe it was linked to on data transmission, that code.uk, where someone asked him about it, and Caribou was like, math.
Math schmath.
Yeah, math schmath. Different things.
Yeah.
So it was kind of disappointing. You could imagine the interviewers, kind of slumping down, when he got that answer. But other ones, Art Garfunkel had a master's degree in mathematics, which I was not aware of.
I was surprised by that one.
Yeah. I mean, certainly his hair seems to indicate some sort of like science lab type situation, but no, he and again, I can't think of any Garfunkel songs where I've listened to him and been like, wow, Bright Eyes is such a mathematical song,
Yeah.
And again, maybe I'm missing the finer corners of his discography, but yeah. And then another one that comes to mind is a chap by the name of Rupert Way, who DJs under the name DJ Irk.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually interviewed him for the blogs a little while back. And he has like a PhD in some type of mathematics, that dynamic systems or something. It just goes right over my head when he told me what it was. But yeah, and these are just a few. Do you have any that I'm leaving off?
No, that sounds, those are some of the big ones, I think. And I was actually revisiting your interview with him, and he was talking, you were asking him about the connection between math and music. And I think he was saying that it doesn't really help any more than it does with he says, say, a trip around the supermarket. I don't know, I've obviously taken that out of context. but he did say something about mental agility, good memory, good numeracy, and a lot of determination, he says, are what really counts. And although these are math related, I'm quoting him, they are not math specific. There are lots of overriding instinctive and emotional factors too.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting because, he's sort of saying, yeah, all of this helps, but it does not make you a musician per se, because there are some factors that you just can't, that don't fit into the mathematical model, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. His answer was far more insightful than Caribou's, I found.
Yeah. 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 He went on to say some very interesting stuff, actually. So if you haven't checked out Robert's blog on that, with DJ Irk, you should definitely check that out.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll throw the link up. But yeah, you end up in this situation where the answer is kind of, yeah, kind of, yeah, but also, nah, not really.
yeah.
And there's no real firm answer because, I mean, when you break it down, we've discussed in the past, like mathematics, what is it? Mm-hmm. Is it a human invention that just is so clever that it describes everything in the universe? Or is it a discovery? Did we find the secret language of the universe and we're so awesome because we found it? Again,
right.
Humans end up looking pretty awesome either way you spin that. But either way, you're talking about a system of numbers that can describe everything. So it stands to reason that it would be able to describe music.
Right, right. And yes, so there are definitely some similarities with that, because you would ask the same thing about music in a sense, right? Is
right.
music something that we discovered or is just sort of inherent and in us? And mm-hmm. then we've talked about even our fingers before, right? We've got five fingers on each hand and how that's determined our currency in the way that we count in number systems. And same thing with music. It's determined the way that we have created scales and we've
right.
created instruments.
Yeah, like strings vibrate at a certain frequency, and
mm-hmm.
you can measure those mathematically. Sound waves can also be described by mathematical equations.
Right.
And it comes down to, like, scientists of any discipline, they use mathematics to describe the physical world,
mm-hmm.
a changing physical world of movable objects, and they predict the outcome of physical processes.
Right.
So, there's going to be some crossover there. But then again, an equation is not going to be able to describe a piece of music. And, there are certain mathematical, there are equations that can describe some of the mathematical structures that are inherent in music.
Okay.
But you're not going to be able to say, I want to listen to that, that concerto by, so-and-so, but I don't have time for the full thing. Just send me the, equation.
Well, and it's interesting too, because each equation you could interpret in a different way as a musician, right? But I mean, so there's, that's the part of it that's like, well, okay, here's the precise language, that, and again, drawing parallels to math, math has a universal precise language, right?
Right.
But once, you know, you give this equation of music to someone, they might perform it in a completely different way.
Right.
Or take liberties with it that you wouldn't necessarily see in math. But again, talking about similarities, both disciplines gravitate towards symmetry, right? You see this mm-hmm. in music all the time. Of course, there's cacophony, right?
Yeah, noise, music, and all that. I mean, that's the thing, too. It's like music, when you're talking about, like, what is music? Yeah, there's certain types of music that are very mathematical sounding.
Mm-hmm.
And you can break down, apply some number to the numbers to the music theory of it all, and it makes perfect sense. But then you pull out some sort of, noise artist where they're using very abstract sounds.
Yeah.
Music that, to quote my wife, sounds like someone threw a xylophone down a stairwell.
Oh, nice.
Then it's going to be hard to say, like, oh, well, mathematically, this is what's going on there.
Yeah.
But then again, you could also make the counter argument that even a chaotic system, there's math going on there. You can go back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the ancient Greeks, they definitely thought there were numbers tied up in music, that math and music were very closely related.
Is this Pythagoras's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because he was all about the ratios.
And his whole, like, system of education. They considered music to be a strictly mathematical discipline involving number relationships, ratios, and proportions. And so if you break it down, it would basically be a subdivision to quantitative mathematics in Pythagorean time.
Okay.
So, yeah, harmonic ratios, proportions, central in the Greeks' understanding to musical understanding.
Okay. Yeah. And so just to back up a little bit to the five tone or the pentatonic scale developed about 3,000 years ago in China. And then the Greeks, they have the seven tone scale, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we're talking about the 12 tone scale, right? And this is when we're talking about Pythagoras really obsessing on these ratios. And I won't go into the math behind it, but that's how we sort of came up with these varying scales. And it wasn't till around, I think, Bach's time, where they took one of those ratios that was a bit off and tinkered with it, and they came up with the final 12 tones.
Right.
So, again, there's a system behind there. There's math that's driving the way that we are expressing music, which is pretty interesting.
All right. But what exactly is going on in the brain, right?
Yes.
Yes. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will look at math and music in the human mind.
This presentation is brought to you by Intel, sponsors of tomorrow.
And we're back. Music, brains,
yes.
Math. What's happening?
What is going on?
Yes. So, obviously, scientists have looked at the brain
mm-hmm.
and analyzed what exactly is going on when we think about music or contemplate music versus contemplating math. And scientists have actually looked at brain injuries that suggest a single region in the left hemisphere of the brain gives rise to sequential analytic processing, which is used for both doing algebra and reading music.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But then on the other hand, there was a 2008 study from the University of Arkansas that used a human information processing survey instrument, or a HIPS instrument, to measure hemispheric laterality. They used 101 participants, asked them to discuss their prowess in first math and then in music. And their findings suggested that math is a left hemisphere preference and music is a right hemisphere preference.
Okay. Well, it's interesting, right? Because we've talked about music before and how it affects the brain, and we've found that there is no one music center. So it's sort of spread out throughout the brain.
Right.
But to know that's obviously engaging in a part of the brain that's tracking math is interesting.
And likewise, there have been a number of studies which sort of say different things about exactly how musical education affects one's mathematical prowess. There have been studies that have found that people with musical training outperform people who don't have musical training.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's stuff like, for instance, there was the Montreal Piano Project. All right. Half the children were given piano lessons for 3 years. And after 2 years, the piano playing kids were outscoring the others on spatial ability. So the argument here was that, learning music helps you with math because it's reinforcing the brain circuits that power spatial thinking.
Right.
Which comes in handy not only for knowing what keys match up with what note, but also in geometry, physics, and chemistry. All right. But then opposing that, we have a study from the University of Toronto. And this one is pretty cool, too. They took, 6-year-olds, all right? And, they took weekly piano and singing lessons, throughout the school year. And they, exhibited an average IQ increase of 7.0 points.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
The other 6-year-olds, who took either weekly drama lessons or received no extracurricular, lessons displayed an average IQ rise of 4.3 points.
Okay.
So, that's another one that also seems to indicate, all right, they're learning music and this is helping them with their scores. But I also think, like non-scientifically, that maybe the drama kids were just having more fun and didn't have as much time to really play with the studying all that much.
Huh. All right. Yeah. They were too busy emoting.
Yeah, emoting. Yeah. And then the kids who didn't get anything, they were just sitting around in study hall, like destroying desks with tiny axes or something.
They weren't having new experiences, and we just talked about this, about important it is that you need to have new experiences in order to create new pathways.
Yeah, discussed in our Einstein's Brain podcast.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, so there's some basis here for some waltzing, let's say, between the brain and music and maths. What I was interested in knowing was whether anybody had ever actually taken a piece of music and said, okay, here's some math right here.
Okay.
Right. Because there are certain pieces of music that I hear sometimes and I'm like, God, maybe geometrically I can see things going on in this music. Which is sort of interesting.
Now,
right?
You're talking about in your mind, not the visualizer that pops up.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Not in front of my computer with, you know, I don't have like purple splashes. what I found was that there is a book called Metamagical Themas. It's called Questing for the Essence of Mind and Pattern by Douglas Hofstadter. And he actually looked at Chopin's music and Bach's as well. But he said, Chopin's music is filled to the brim, I'm quoting, with algebraic tricks of cross rhythm. A famous example is in his iconoclastic waltz, Opus 42 in A flat major, written in 1840. In this waltz, the bass line follows the usual pa convention of the waltz. I don't know if I... Yeah, nice, yeah. Okay. Dun, 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 dun. Okay. But the melody of the first section completely counters this threeness. It's six eighth notes, instead of being broken up into three pairs aligned with the left hand bounces while playing, form two triplets. The initial notes of the successive triplets are to be clearly emphasized and prolonged, thus creating a higher level melody abstracted out of the quietly rippling right hand.
So wow. I think I'm going to have to hear an example to put that together.
Yes, yes. And he's saying that this melody is composed of two notes per measure beating regularly against three notes of a waltzing bass. And he says it's a marvelous trompe l'oreille effect, which means the aural equivalent to an optical illusion, basically.
Okay.
So let's take a quick listen to this waltz, Opus 42, in A flat major. I don't know. Did you hear it?
Yeah, I think I can get a sense of some of that coming together.
I definitely got the pa.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's one example where someone has actually tried to map this, which is kind of interesting. And there was another example that I found by mathematician Hans Straub, and he talks about modal jazz. And the reason I wanted to look into this is because...
Now, what is modal jazz?
Modal jazz is... someone like Miles Davis.
Okay.
Miles Davis is usually attributed to be the person that sort of created modal jazz or popularized it, particularly in the 50s. So this modal jazz is said to have a more horizontal structure, whereas traditional jazz is structured more vertically. And modal just means that he took a bunch of notes and he sort of squished them all in. This is my horrible understanding of both mathematics and music theory.
Just seems weird that jazz would, like, I thought jazz was free flowing, man. I thought you can't put math on jazz. Jazz has its own rhythm. Jazz is going to do its own thing.
Well, that's the incredible thing. That's why I love Miles Davis, is because it does seem like there's a lot of, sort of off the cuff playing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the fact of the matter is that they're taking some very, concentric, like, rhythms. And then they're playing off of that.
Okay.
So what you might hear, which sounds sort of like, oh, wow, man, that cat is just going nuts on mm-hmm. the saxophone. They are, but they're doing it in the sort of loops, these horizontal loops, and they're not doing a lot of key changes. So let me try to
talk through that. Okay, sort of like if you had like a really crazy story that at its heart followed a traditional story arc, even if it involved like aardvarks from Mars in love with each other or something.
Yeah, yeah. And everybody knows that once you start, you know, to be good at any craft, right, you have to know the absolute basics. You have to master it. And, you know, Miles Davis is someone who certainly was a master at what he did. So that gave him the ability to sort of riff off of stuff and play with modal notes and do all these sort of different things that actually changed people's perception of that music itself. So what I thought was interesting about it is that this guy, Hans Straub, he talks about the traditional jazz being structured more vertically, which means in this context that traditional jazz improvisations are based on chord progressions. And modal jazz, on the other hand, improvisations typically go on for long periods without any chord change. So that's what I was talking about earlier. And the interest is more turned towards the melodic line. That's why I thought it was sort of interesting to me, because I thought I can see that visually. I can see that in Miles Davis's music. You can see this horizontal spreading. You can see it in Yo-Yo Ma when he does, the box suites. You can see it maybe even in like PJ Harvey and like White Chalk. Like that's an album that has sort of like this horizontal spreading. Although you could say there's some, there's some vertical loops of cacophony in that as well. But anyway, let's just listen to a quick clip from, Kind of Blue, Miles Davis.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. There we go.
Now, did you say this is actually your favorite track, your favorite song, favorite album?
I mean, the entire album is my favorite. There's actually not one song on there that I would say is my absolute favorite. I love it as a whole piece. And, you know, we've talked about this before in getting in the zone. And this is one of those pieces of music that I can listen to. And it does kind of put me into a different state that allows me to think clearer or think at higher levels.
Oh, wow.
I think is why I like it. And also, we've talked about this too, like lyrics sometimes bother me when I'm trying to cogitate up in my noggin. So, you know, that's some of the discovery here where we're seeing the music and the math, at least, again, geometrically, I can see it. I don't know if it's the same for other people. But there's a guy named Dave Rusin. He's the associate professor of mathematics at Northern Illinois University. And he really does try to make this correlation between music and math. And he thinks it's important for students to better understand math, in fact. He says mathematics, like music, embodies certain patterns and ideas which don't translate well into words.
As we've found out.
True that. Yeah. and as you, listener, have found out. We can feel them, see them, understand them, but only after we have really worked to lift them off the paper and into our minds. Only after we've tried to see where they come from. Only after considerable practice with the minutiae, gradually adding the trills. Do we have the full spirit of the idea? Mathematics, like music, is a human adventure. People create and discover it. They try to then share it and enjoy it.
Yeah. I definitely found that to be the case with both music and mathematics, because on one hand, I love certain genres of music, and I'll listen to it all the time, but I'm not necessarily really good at describing what's great about it. Like if I'm like, you know, talking to a friend, I'm like, oh, you got to listen to this new mix by so-and-so. And they might be like, well, what's awesome about it? And I may be a little stumped for words, you know, unless I have some time to prep. Likewise with mathematics, the last week I was working on an article about number theory.
Mm-hmm.
And like number theory, especially when writing for a general audience and a, you know, non-math audience, it quickly becomes a conversation that cannot be really held in English, but needs to be held, or any language, but needs to be held in math. You know, it needs to be held with numerals and equations. So it becomes increasingly difficult to explain the topic without being the topic. You know?
Right. And that's why us wily humans, I suppose, turn to math and music to try to express ourselves and our ideas in a better way.
Yeah, because I think I saw it pointed out that both music and math are like they're self-describing things.
Mm-hmm.
The music describes itself. The math describes itself.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, at the end of the day, it kind of sounds like, you know, defeatist, but they both kind of describe themselves the best. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Looking in the mirror.
Yeah.
I'm trying to change the world. I don't know. I was trying to do Michael Jackson there.
Oh, that's all right.
I apologize.
Wait, you were trying to do like an impersonation?
I was thinking that math and music were looking at each other in the world, and then looking at each other in the mirror, and then I started thinking about that song, Man in the Mirror.
Oh, gotcha.
It's just bad all around.
No, it wasn't that bad. It was good. You did fine.
Thank you. So supportive.
We have, speaking of math, though, we have a listener mail here from a listener by the name of Timothy. He says, "Hello, Stuff to Blow Your Mind crew. I just wanted to say thank you for the unusually deep mathematics podcast. I am a science and philosophy enthusiast, and I just happened to be in the middle of a book called A World Without Time, The Forgotten Legacy of Gödel and Einstein when you aired your podcast. I personally believe that Gödel's incompleteness theorems, the existence of non-Euclidean geometries, the necessity of imaginary numbers, and such all point to math as a formal system invented by humans. It strikes me as something similar to a game, like chess, where simple rules give rise to an incredibly complex overall system. I could imagine a chess-like game being created to model physics. What is interesting to me is that Gödel, like many mathematicians, was of the opposite persuasion. He believed that math exists independent of the human mind. By the way, one of my favorite books is also Gödel, Escher, Bach by Douglas Hofstadter.
Can we look that?
Which I highly recommend to any listeners who also enjoy the math podcast. Thank you for all the hard work you two do. Tim.
Oh, thanks, Tim.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have the podcast that we referenced earlier. Is math a human invention or a human discovery? And, that one was a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, it was. Again, we were both a little bit trepidatious about, entering into the realm of math, but it turns out it was not painful at all.
Yeah. And if you want to enter into our realm, then all you have to do is check out Facebook and Twitter.
It is not painful either.
Not painful at all. Unless Twitter's down or something, then it can be a little frustrating.
Yeah,
But no, we're Blow the Mind on both of those, and we update that with all sorts of links to cool stuff we're reading, cool stuff we're writing, cool stuff that we just podcasted about.
And we would love to hear from you, so please feel free to drop us a line at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, "Well, I had this career before, but it was a waste." And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.